The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Named after the Illinois hometown of a handful of its original settlers, Bloomington, Texas, is located south of the city of Victoria in Victoria County. The town itself more or less came into fruition as the result of the need for a railroad station in the area on the St. Louis, Brownsville, and Mexico Railway, and for many years preceding its official incorporation in 1913, that's all Bloomington was, a crossroads. In order to build a major roadway directly through Bloomington, Texas State Highway 185, the town lost its incorporation in 1929 and instead became a census-designated place. The highway didn't change Bloomington itself much at first, certainly not as much as it changed Victoria to its north. But as automobile ownership became more popular, Bloomington as a crossroads or an oasis became more and more unnecessary, and businesses there suffered for it. Considering the modest but strong farming, ranching, and lumber economy, and the rural small-town charm and beauty of the coastal plains, it's anyone's guess why Bloomington didn't grow much until 1947, when oil was discovered there. That, along with folks taking jobs at petrochemical companies in the area, DuPont and Union Carbide specifically, brought a few new faces into town. But even the discovery of oil did little to cause any kind of growth spurt in Bloomington. In fact, after the craze of the boom had long died down, the tiny Texas town would lose some of its nearly 2,000 residents during the 1970s. In the 1980s, Bloomington began something of a comeback as the population slowly and sluggishly moved forward. But it remained a small rural town, probably just how folks there like it. Remaining small certainly kept crime to a minimum, with rates far less than the considerably bigger city to its north, Victoria. So, in 1995, when one of the small town's most beloved and respected citizens vanished under circumstances that could only be theorized as foul play, the community was shocked. Efforts to find out what happened to 36-year-old Kenneth "Coach" Kenny Hilscher, however, all failed, and his case went cold. Kenneth Wayne Hilscher was born in Victoria, Texas, on August 22, 1958, to parents James and Shelby. Most often in his childhood, Kenneth was referred to as Ken or Kenny, but later on in life, he'd become known as Coach Kenny. Kenny grew up in Bloomington alongside one brother and one sister. After graduating from Bloomington High School in 1976, Kenny moved on to attend the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, where he received a dental technician degree in May of 1981. Then, in 1986, Kenny graduated with a degree in physical education and biology from Texas A&M. After that, Kenny Hilscher moved back home and accepted a job as a coach and science teacher at Bloomington Junior High School. It took no time at all for students to warm up to Coach Kenny. The kids he taught appreciated the fact that he'd come back to town to teach and coach. Coach Kenny kept his students interested and motivated with his fun, high-energy style of teaching. One of his former junior high students commented that he lit up the room with his laugh and smile, and it didn't hurt that he was fashion conscious, always dressing to the nines, the student remembered. In 1991, Coach Kenny moved up a notch by accepting a coaching position at the place he had competed in basketball and football himself, Bloomington High School. The following year, in 1992, he was named head junior varsity coach, instructing not only the basketball and football teams, but also various other athletic programs the school offered. High school football, particularly, and basketball are both pretty big deals in Texas in general, but it's difficult to overstate their importance in small Texas towns, especially. So, the choice to offer Coach Kenny Hilscher a head position mentoring Bloomington's burgeoning young athletes likely wasn't one taken lightly. It paid off. For three straight seasons between 1991 and 1995, Coach Kenny took the Bloomington Bobcats to the playoffs. The 1993 season, in fact, Coach Kenny's second year as head coach, was the first time since 1973 that the basketball team had made the playoffs when he was attending Bloomington High. Humbly, Coach Kenny said that having been there the last time, it was a neat experience to see them do it again. But his good calls as a coach and his humility were hardly all that made the man so beloved by his fellow coaches, teachers, and students. Then-principal Ed Rendon called Kenny Hilscher the type of teacher and coach that could get an otherwise apathetic student or athlete to produce and perform. He was full of life and positivity. Coach Kenny got along well with all the students under his care and instruction, and was always in their corner, encouraging and cheering them on. It certainly helped that they thought he was cool. He was always up on the latest styles, and is rumored to have been one hell of a dancer. If asked, "What is Bobcat spirit?" one former student said, you could answer by simply showing a photo of Coach Kenny Hilscher. On the evening of Saturday, April 8, 1995, Coach Kenny stopped by his parents' house to share with them the results of the district track meet he'd just attended. It was getting a little late, and Kenny's father, James, asked his son to spend the night. The Hilschers were Baptist, and James figured Kenny could just stay over and go to church with them the next morning. He declined his father's offer, telling James he had groceries in his truck that he needed to get home and put away. Also, anyway, he had plans the next morning and was likely going to miss church. Kenny told his father he was planning on heading down to the bay to relax and catch a little sun. It's unclear which bay he planned to go to or area thereof, but the nearest to the coach's home, Lavaca Bay, was around 25 minutes away. Besides the trip to the bay, Coach Kenny told his father he might be attending a party. He left his parents' house, presumably heading straight to his home. Kenny lived by himself on Black Bayou Road No. 2, a road just outside Bloomington city limits to the west. His closest neighbor was a mile away, and his house sat off the road about 300 yards. It was immediately clear to Bloomington High School principal Ed Rendon that something wasn't right on the morning of Monday, April 10, 1995, when Coach Kenny Hilscher didn't show up for work. If he was ever going to be even a minute late, Principal Rendon said, Kenny would call and let the school know. Everyone, in fact, knew something was wrong, Rendon added, because Coach Kenny took care of business. When the school called his father James at 11 a.m. and told him his son had neither shown up nor called, he became immediately worried. Kenny never once missed a day of school without calling in a substitute and providing them with a full day of lessons planned and prepared. James Hilscher quickly headed to his son's home, and when he arrived, his heart sank. In front of Coach Kenny Hilscher's house was his pickup, the keys still in the ignition. In the truck, too, were the groceries he had purchased 2 days before. The house was open. James Hilscher immediately called the Victoria County Sheriff's Office and reported his 36-year-old son missing. Searches for Coach Kenny began relatively quickly after he disappeared, first by deputies. As lawmen combed through the overgrown brush and looked through the dense thickets in the area near his home, friends of Kenny's appeared as volunteers to help. On foot, horseback, and by chopper, the searches continued throughout the day. Meanwhile, Victoria County Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe and deputies began collecting information on Coach Kenny's last known movements, which had occurred at least 36 hours prior. Sheriff Ratcliffe determined that nothing was unusual about Kenny Hilscher's movements or behavior leading up to his disappearance, and other than failing to contact family and show up for work, nothing was obviously out of place. It seemed certain that Kenny didn't make it to the beach or the party on the previous day as he'd planned, the sheriff said, but his investigators did not suspect foul play. It's unclear what they thought about the keys in the truck's ignition or the groceries within, but for whatever reason, they didn't seem too worried about that. Less than 10 hours after saying they didn't suspect foul play, however, a discovery made nearby shattered that statement. Less than 2 miles from Coach Kenny Hilscher's home, on the corner of Old Bloomington Road and Black Bayou Road No. 1, a searching volunteer firefighter made a dark discovery. Lying on the ground there was a pair of men's briefs and a white shirt, bloodied and badly stained. The items were believed to belong to the missing man and sent to a Texas Department of Public Safety crime lab in Austin for testing and analysis. Less than 10 hours before, Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe told reporters that his investigators did not believe foul play was involved in the disappearance of Coach Kenny Hilscher, but now that was an impossible statement to make while looking someone in the eye. The Victoria County Sheriff's Office were now working the case as an apparent homicide. One other potential clue was found at Coach Kenny Hilscher's home, though it was poorly worded in reports and never expounded upon. While searching the house, detectives found a window screen raised about 2 inches. It was, to quote the report, forcibly removed and unable to be locked, end quote. If it was said to have been both forcibly removed and raised about 2 inches, I can only presume that means it had been forcibly removed at some unknown time, but put back in its place since. Still, this particular detail is unclear and could have absolutely nothing to do with the disappearance of Kenny Hilscher, but it also very well could. Authorities were now certain of only one thing. Kenny had met with foul play. Whether he was still alive or if he'd been slain, however, was still unknown, and upon the discovery of the bloodied shirt, it was clear that the searches should be kicked up a notch. For days, lawmen and volunteers alike continued to pour through unforgiving terrain in search of clues and evidence. But especially for something far more macabre, they knew. They were searching for the body of Coach Kenny Hilscher. The Victoria Barge Canal, used to transport more than 6 million tons of grain, lumber, oil, gravel, and other products from the Port of Victoria to a number of spots off the waterway and to the Gulf of Mexico, is very close to Kenny's house. It became one of the primary search objectives in the beginning. Once authorities and professionals of varying skills began searching the Victoria Barge Canal, the effort lasted for days. Virtually everywhere else in and around Bloomington, Texas was searched, and volunteers included Coach Kenny's colleagues and students. In fact, those particular volunteers met and organized at Bloomington High, and there was no shortage of them. They, like his parents, were particularly concerned about the coach. Principal Ed Rendon often spoke for the entirety of the faculty of the school, and he was often flustered, unable to hide his genuine and intense worry.
"We just don't know what to think," Principal Rendon lamented. "Nothing like this has ever happened here. This is just not like him. He's very dependable, very reliable."
Coach Kinney's description and what he was last known to be wearing, of course, had been publicized as the searches were performed. A white male, Kenneth Hilscher stands 5'7" tall and weighs 160 pounds, the description read. When he disappeared, he was wearing a white t-shirt, black shorts, and either black and white Nike tennis shoes or black sandals. Coach Kinney wore a black plastic sports watch and a 1986 Texas A&M class ring, gold-plated with a diamond. After 6 days had passed since he was seen, Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe announced that the Hilscher family was offering a reward of $10,000 for information. The family was hoping the money was enough incentive for someone to step forward and at least provide a lead to follow, since neither they nor the Victoria County Sheriff's Office had absolutely any others to pursue. As if Kenny Hilscher had simply vanished into thin air. While detectives were all but certain Coach Kenny's disappearance was the result of homicide, and were investigating it as such, without a body, Deputy Bob Harrod Jr. told reporters, the sheriff's office was reluctant to officially label the case that way. Victoria County's jurisdiction generally saw 2 or 3 murders a year, but this one was different, and far more puzzling than the normal homicide.
"This is a very different form of events for one of our cases," Deputy Harrod commented.
Speaking on behalf of the Hilscher family, Sheriff Ratcliffe said his department was asking for someone to come forward with information that they could actually investigate. He was sure, the lawman said, that there are folks out there in the community that know something. It's unclear if that statement was rhetorical. The reward offered by the Hilscher family was to be given for either information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for the disappearance, or for information leading to the recovery of Coach Kenny's body. It isn't clear to us exactly when the Texas Department of Public Safety Crime Lab reported the results of testing Kenny Hilscher's bloody t-shirt to the Victoria County Sheriff's Office, but it was within a couple weeks. Technicians there concluded the possibility the blood belonged to Coach Kenny was 98%. The missing man's boss, Bloomington High School Principal Ed Rendon, still unable to fathom that there was anyone who had reason to harm his friend and prized coach, decided to cling to the small chance the blood was not his.
"That leaves a 2% chance that he might just come walking back through that door," Rendon said.
But the reality was far less optimistic, and the other results of testing provided a glimpse into how Coach Kenny might have met his demise. According to the DPS crime lab, the person wearing the bloodied white shirt found within 2 miles of Kenny Hilscher's home just 10 hours after the searches for him began was shot 3 times with a shotgun. Based on the pattern of the shotgun pellet holes and blood stains, technicians determined that Coach Kenny was shot once in the chest and twice in the back.
"It's very frustrating when you're bombarded with theories and rumors and information that cannot go uninvestigated, but a lot of times leads to dead ends,"
Victoria County Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe told a newspaper reporter with the Victoria Advocate. And that's exactly what happened almost immediately upon the discovery of Kenny Hilscher's disappearance. From specific locations where Coach Kenny's body could be found, the concrete recently poured at a local Phillips 66 service station, to rumors citing the specific names of those involved. Theories included Brothers of a woman the missing man had been purportedly dating didn't approve of the relationship and took care of Kenny, and that he'd been having an affair with a married woman. A commonality shared between some of the rumors was that there was a police cover-up. Michael Lewis Ratcliffe began his career in law enforcement when he took a job as a dispatcher for the Victoria County Sheriff's Office in the late 1970s, not long after he graduated from a local high school. He was deputized in 1980, but left the department in early 1991 to obtain training in the FBI National Academy's 164th session, before returning to Victoria County a few months later and campaigning for sheriff. Ratcliffe won and began the first of his three terms as the county's number one lawman on January 1, 1993. For virtually the entirety of the man's career, including throughout the investigation into the disappearance of Coach Kenny Hilscher, Mike Ratcliffe was seen by a majority of his constituents as a fine and fair deputy and sheriff. But in 2007, after a lengthy investigation by Texas's top law enforcement agency and investigators and agents at the federal level, troubling rumors had already been long swirling about his involvement in a then-current murder investigation and his involvement in a years-old case. Before we go any further, it seems important to mention that, perhaps, 3 out of 5 cases we cover on Gone Cold involve rumors of a police cover-up or involvement. Those rumors are generally rampant and relayed to us or others with fervor. A vast majority of the time, there's no evidence or even substantive basis for them, and we leave the rumors out completely. However, when lawmen implicated are proven to be involved in other criminal activity, or even brought up on charges of other criminal activity, this type of talk becomes difficult to ignore, and, quite frankly, potentially pertinent. On October 25, 2007, a grand jury indicted 49-year-old former Victoria County Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe on 3 counts of the sexual abuse of a teenaged boy 11 years earlier, when he still held the position of the county's top cop. He was taken into custody. An investigation into Ratcliffe, who'd since been hired as the Victoria County District Attorney's Chief of Staff, began 14 months earlier after a man came forward alleging that he'd been sexually abused by the man as a teenager. The Texas Department of Public Safety's Criminal Investigations Service and the FBI investigated. A couple weeks after Ratcliffe's arrest, on November 6, 2007, lead investigator on the case, Texas Department of Public Safety Sergeant John Schlinger, served a warrant on 2 units Ratcliffe rented at Fortress Storage Center. It should be noted that the former sheriff had since been released after posting bond, and the storage center's manager refused to tell authorities if Ratcliffe had returned to the unit in the time between that and the warrant's execution. Anyway, Sergeant Schlinger confiscated many pornographic magazines, VHS tapes, Polaroid photos, CDs, floppy disks, and letters from the units. The lead investigator did not find the items he sought. The man accusing Ratcliffe of sexually assaulting him as a teen had said that the then sheriff and he watched pornography together in an oversized chair while the abuse occurred. The chair and the alleged way Ratcliffe solicited the minor, his computer, were never taken into evidence as far as we can tell. None of the items seized were described as child pornography, to be fair, and further statements made by the Victoria County District Attorney suggest that none was found, although an official within that office, a member of the Victoria Police, and the mayor of the city were later indicted and arrested after being accused of interfering with the investigation into former Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe. So perhaps all the evidence was not seen. It's a mess and far too much to get into here. Eventually, on Friday, August 15, 2008, Ratcliffe agreed to plead guilty to lesser charges, or rather, completely different charges, when he took a deal to plead guilty to aggravated perjury. Former Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe, he said, had only lied to the grand jury when asked if he'd ever had sexual relations with his now 25-year-old accuser. They'd maintained an ongoing sexual relationship when the man was an adult, Ratcliffe now admitted, claiming never to have sexually abused him as a boy. He was sentenced to 6 months home confinement and electronic ankle monitor enforcement and 10 years probation. Even before the allegations against Ratcliffe were announced to the public, rumors were rampant that he was involved in covering up the abduction, rape, and strangulation death of 53-year-old Sally Blackwell, a program director for South Texas Child Protective Services. These allegations were likely due to the suspicion that Sally's ex-boyfriend, a captain for the Victoria County Sheriff's Office, killed her, since prized bloodhounds Quincy and James Bond continually led their handlers to him. Another man, however, the son of an on-again, off-again boyfriend of Sally's, was later tried and convicted of her murder. If he is truly guilty, and the DNA evidence and confession make it likely, then, of course, former Sheriff Ratcliffe could not have been involved in any cover-up, as rumors might have had some believing. He'd have no reason to protect the man who pleaded guilty to killing Sally Blackwell. But there are also rampant rumors that Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe was somehow involved in either the actual killing of Kenneth Hilscher or the cover-up of his murder. It is not difficult to speculate what those rumors probably consist of. Those rumors, however, are never fleshed out. The original sources of them, to our knowledge, have never surfaced. All over Bloomington, Texas, in the months after Coach Kenny Hilscher vanished, yellow ribbons covered the small town in his memory, on trees, utility poles, car antennas, and signposts, wherever you could tie one. Upwards of 20 counselors from the surrounding areas came to Bloomington High School to offer students therapy and tools to cope with their beloved coach's disappearance. The entire student body, Principal Ed Rendon commented, felt down and dejected. Players for the Bloomington Bobcats, football, basketball, and baseball, adorned their jerseys with patches that read, "Coach H." When the Scholastic League told the Bobcats the patches were not regulation, the players decided to forfeit the season in lieu of removing them from their uniforms. The league, of course, changed their mind and compromised. The patches, Bloomington High School baseball coach and cousin to Kenny Hilscher said, were as important to him and his players as the American flag. Students and faculty alike wore green ribbons that read, "Coach H," as they went about their school days. Outside the high school, the billboard read, "Pray for Coach Hilscher." Although his body has never been found, the Victoria County Sheriff's Office presumes Kenny Hilscher to have died late on the night of April 8, 1995, or in the early morning hours of the 9th, sprayed with pellets from a shotgun blast shortly after he arrived home from visiting his parents. His mother, Shelby Hilscher, lacks any semblance of closure like the rest of his family, but says she has found some peace. She and Kenny's father, James, knew that the investigation must go on, but to help his students heal, they decided to hold a memorial to him before the 1995-1996 school year began. Attendees were asked to donate to the Kenny Hilscher Scholarship Fund instead of bringing flowers to the service. His sister, Kathy Graham, told the crowd gathered at Bloomington's First Baptist Church that she dreamt about her brother. "Coach Kenny was in heaven," she continued, and Kathy felt his hug when he told her that he was fine and said goodbye. His cousin and fellow coach at Bloomington High, Mike Newman, joked about Kenny's poor mechanical skills, but said it was coaching and teaching that he put his heart and soul into, and he was good at it.
"Tell somebody you love them today,"
Kenny's father James said as he concluded the memorial service,
"because they won't be here tomorrow."
In 2001, former Bloomington High School Student Council President and 2000 school year valedictorian Jesse Bernal said he was speechless when school trustees declined to name the school gymnasium after the beloved science teacher and coach. Bernal and the rest of his graduating class, the last in the school who'd been taught and coached by Kenny Hilscher, had all decided he should be honored. The trustees said they didn't want to start a tradition of naming schoolrooms and buildings after faculty and staff. Coach Kenny's legacy would not live on at Bloomington High School, and those he taught were shocked and saddened by that. Over the years, the disappearance of Coach Kenny Hilscher saw some news coverage and investigative effort. The television show Inside Edition featured the missing persons case months after Kenny was last seen on their October 24, 1995 episode. In 1998, the Victoria County Sheriff's Office attempted hypnosis on an unknown possible witness. What came of that effort is not entirely clear.
"We have investigated some leads that developed over the last several weeks,"
Sheriff Mike Ratcliffe said in 1999, but apparently those did not pan out. When human remains were found in between the DuPont chemical plant and Kenny's home in 2002, the first thought is that they belonged to the missing coach, but they did not. Perhaps the most interesting lead that ever came in the Kenny Hilscher case was in 2005. After receiving a tip from a man who said he had something to get off his chest that involved Kenny's 1995 disappearance, Texas Rangers searched the tipster's vehicle and the Texas Department of Public Safety reopened the long, cold case. It's unclear if anything new was gleaned as a result. In March of 2018, when a body was discovered at the spot Kenny Hilscher's bloodied and shotgun pellet-riddled clothing was found more than two decades before, detectives wondered if there was a connection. The deceased man, 45-year-old John Paul Hartley, also known as Snyder, was found lying next to a green car. When the results of his autopsy came back, however, it was determined that the man had died from cardiovascular disease, natural causes. It was unrelated, of course, to the disappearance and likely slaying of Coach Kenny. If you have any information about the disappearance or murder of Coach Kenneth Wayne Hilscher, please contact the Texas Department of Public Safety at 512-424-5074. The Victoria Advocate, the Austin American Statesman, CrossroadsToday.com, the Texas State Historical Association's website, and PortOfVictoria.com were used as sources for this episode. You can support the show at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. There, you can get the show ad-free and enjoy Patreon-exclusive episodes that tell stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. I get those out as much as I can, which is not as often as I would like. Another way you can support Gone Cold is by leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes or wherever else you listen. Thank you in advance. Those reviews help Gone Cold's visibility, which helps new listeners find us, which increases the potential for someone with information hearing the show and reporting what they know to authorities. Thanks for listening, y'all.